All right, let's continue. Okay, the pasuk it says now, "Vasein shabe kuv echad mikotze." Echad one kuv from mikotze mize. Mikotze mize kuv echad mikotze mize. One kuv from one side, one from the other side. From the min hakaperes, from the kaperes tasu es hakuvim. You shall make the kuvim al shnei kitzes on its two sides. And there's a lot of repetition over here. I mean, pasuk yutes. You really gotta ask yourself, what is pasuk yutes telling you that they're not already saying pasuk yutes? Pasuk yutes reasis, so you shall make shneim kiruvim zohov niksha taase oisam mishnei ketzoy sakaperes. Now pasuk yutes vaase you shall make kruv echad mikotze mize uchruv echad mikotze mize. I mean, what does that mean? What are you coming to air? It already said shneim kiruvim zohov. What are you coming to air? A kuv from one side, a kuv from the other side. It says at the end, it says, "Mishnei kitzoy sakaperis." Kuv echad mikotze mize, kuv echad mikotze mize. Where menakaperis? Ta'asu es hakuvim, you should make the kuvim al shnei kitzoy sof. I mean, there's repetition, pasuk yutes, and the whole pasuk yutes in general is repetition. So what is it in the pasuk yutes? No? Mr. Apple, what do you think? There's a lot of repetition over here.
No, I don't think it's repetition. Because Rashi has to explain the last three words in Pasuk Yud Ches, Mishnei Ketzai Sekaparos. If you read it literally, and I'm reading from the English, this is Ches in English, and it's on the board, you shall make two kuvim of gold, beaten, you shall make them for both ends of the lid. So Rashi Einachani says, you could think you put two on one side and two on the other side. So Pasuk Yud Ches is more of a clarification of it. Why the Torah had to give it as a clarification, I don't know. Why did the Torah have to say, Tasa Oysa Mishnei Ketzais Kapuris, Shittel Tzadov Miksha, period, or Tasa Oysam, period, and then brought Pasuk Yutes. The three words, what bothers me is the three extra words in Pasuk Yutes at the end. And the fact that Rashi has to come along in Pasuk Yutes to clarify what you might think from the end of Pasuk Yutes.
Okay, I hear. Okay, let's see. Okay, but it would seem that if you were given the task to take these two psukim, it would seem that you would be able to condense what it says in Yitches and Yutes into one pasuk, a lot less. A lot of words here. It appears overall, okay, there may be a detail here or there, but okay, let's see. Pasuk Yutes, the entire book, he says, V'abed kruvachad one misitra mikoh. Again, this word is a word which is a disturbing word from the side. Okay, this is not like what Rashi says, from the sitra. The sitra is the side, not the surface. Ukruva chad mi sitra miko, from this side, min kapurto, from the kaparis, tabdun you shall make yos kiruvaya, from the kaparis you shall make, from the kaparis, the kruvaya, al train sitra, he again from the two sides, Rashi. Do not make a mistake and think it means you should make a grand total of four. Maybe you would make a mistake, there should be four and one side, four on the other side. So Rashi is answering our question. Rashi is telling us the reason why there's another pasuk is to make it clear. It's two and not four. This goes back to what it said in the previous pasuk. Miksha, do not solder. Solder, do not weld, do not glue with Elmer's glue or whatever glue you want from one to the other. Atzma tasa sakrivim zeperish shall miksha. This exactly what it means. Miksha tasa isam. Shall tasa bifne atzam usachabim lakaparis. I mean, didn't Raj just say that? And didn't say that in the previous pasuk? So he's saying that's what it means, miksha. So does Rashi here mean to say that if I did not say this pasuk, I would make a mistake? And I think miksha means you can attach it. This pasuk is coming to teach us what the word miksha means. Maybe. Okay, maybe. Go back again to the Targum. Now, the Aved Kruv Chachad, one Chad, one Kruv, Misitra Mikol, Kruv Chad, Misitra Mikol, Min Kapurta, from the Kapurta. Okay, I don't know what you can say. Now, I just want to make it interesting. I'll just give you an example. You know, we are brainwashed in a good way to understand the kalim are the way they appear in the illustrations in the art scroll. When we were children, we had the book, the tabernacle book, and we think there's only one way to make the only one way to do it. But when you go through some of the Mefarshim, it's very clear there are many different opinions. I have at home a very good sefer. It's a very heavy sefer. It was put out probably 20 years ago by a very big Talmud Chacham in Cleveland, in the Telza Yeshiva, and he goes through the Kalim of the Beis HaMikdash with all the Mefarshim, and it's amazing how there are no elaborate diagrams. There are very good diagrams. The diagrams are very simple, but they're very accurate. They're very professional. It was done at the time 20 years ago with the best technology that was available. It's very professional, and he goes through everything, and he goes through many, many Rishonim. And I remember then learning it was like such an eye-opening sefer. Like, wow, like we've been fooled all along our whole life to think there's only one way, there's only one interpretation of the pasuk. I mean, it's Rashi. But when you begin to look at other Mefarshim, other Mahalachim, there's a whole world of a commentary. And a lot of the reason why there's so much commentary is because exactly of the questions that we've been asking. Pasuk Yudchas and Pasuk Yitzchak appears to be the epistles in repetition. And Rashi himself attempts to address the issue. Don't say there are four. If Rashi has to go out of his way and say that there are only two Kiruvim, you can be certain that there's someone else that's going to say, not like Rashi, there are four Kiruvim. Rashi doesn't come to reject that Pekarsim. That's not, you can do an entire study on that alone. When Rashi comes to clarify Pshat and the Pasuk, Rashi does not appear to even bother to deal with apikorsis. Rashi's not going to go tell you what the Christians say. The Christians, this is how they learn Pshat and the Pasuk. So we're going to tell you the MS of Pshat. He doesn't even bother with them. They're not even worthy of dealing with. When Rashi deals with ideas, it appears that he's dealing with very holy people, people in his league, who have a different understanding, and he's coming to reject. I'll give you a very simple example. When it comes to the Orain, we're learning about the Kruim, the first Aliyah, the Orain, how many Badim were there on the Orain? How many rings were there? There's repetition. We read that there were four rings, and there were two Badim. But when you look at it very carefully, the pasuk almost literally says there were eight rings and there were two sets of badim, for a grand total of four badim on the arm. And Rashi goes out of his way to say, no, don't make that mistake. Those two psukim are really referring to it's one and the same. If I'm not mistaken, the Rashbam on the page itself says, no, there were actually two different sets of badim. Which each one needed its own rings, four rings, for a grand total of eight rings. And it totally changed the shot. Ad kedei kach, if I'm not mistaken, I remember reading some farshim, is why were the taka two sets of badin, and four and eight rings? Because it all depended on why they were carrying the orin. When they carried the orin from place to place, they used one set of badin. When they would carry the Aron to war, like they did in the time of Eli HaKoyen, that was the only time they actually did it, then they carried the Badim on a different on a different set of poles, because it was a different type of carrying. And some say, another drush is, what was in the Aron? The Luchos and the Shivri Luchos. There was one set of Badim that represented the Luchos, and there's another set of Badim that represented the Shivri Luchos. Okay, another example we find is did the Aron have legs? So Rashi makes it very, very clear, no. The Aron rested on the floor. Would anyone put a Sefer Torah on the floor? How could you put the Aron on the floor? According to Rashi, it was Gzeres HaKasa, that's what it is. Other Mefarshim say, no, they read the Pesukim about the Aron and totally different than the Aron had legs. No different than the Shulchan has legs. No different then it had a legs, a base. Then you don't just rest it on the floor. So everything is subject to debate. Everything is subject. Rashi, we have a Mesorah, we follow. Rashi is the Ikar Shebikarim. This is our Mesorah. But Rashi when you learn the Rashi, to learn Unkelis, it's very interesting how the Rashi is very carefully coming to acknowledge that there are problems, which lead one to interpret the Pasuk differently. And Rashi says, trust me, reject those interpretations, and I'm telling you the emes. And the emes is, V'yasisa ar-shtechrin l'zomik shezutu tasu asam shtechsa kaparas. L'shamek shnayim, Rashi explains his understanding. When it says this pasuk, you don't know what it means. It can mean you shall make two kruvim on one side for a grand total of four. So it says mishnei kitzes hakapares. On each of the two ends of the kapares, there should be two kruvim for a total of four. Two on one side, two on another side. And in order to reject that possibility, the next pasuk yutes comes to clarify va'asei. And then it repeats this thing which Rashi is not telling us why this is being repeated. Rashi just says that when it says here min hakapores, it's coming to explain what it means, the word miksha. Miksha means one piece. If I only had miksha, I did not have minaka paris, I may not know that. That's what it means. I only had minaka paris, and not the word miksha, I may not know. You need to combine it with the word miksha with the word minaka paris to explain that it's going to be one piece of gold, one piece of gold. And you need to have two set of psukim, one to tell you that they're going to be a grand total, it's going to be on the two ends, and to make it clear that on each end you only create one kruv and not two for a total of four. Okay, let's go to the next pasuk.
Question?
Yes.
Rabbi Levine, so if Rashi has to point out, this is what it is, don't think that way, does one assume, therefore, and it's throughout, I guess, all of Rashi's commentaries, when he presents another point of view, that he was aware of the point of view, and he analyzed the point of view that he doesn't agree with, and he's saying, you know, there is this point of view, I don't agree with it, and here's why I don't agree with it. And so, like the Rashbam's point of view we just mentioned, or other points of view, does one assume Rashi knew the Rashbam's point of view?
Absolutely.
Was aware of it?
I can't tell you for sure.
No, I don't accept that.
I believe that. I believe exactly that's what he's doing here. That's exactly what he's doing. If Rashi over here is going over here, Rashi over here is saying, on Pasuk Yutes, we just learned Shaloi Toimar Shnayim Kruvim L'chol Kotze V'Kotze. He absolutely is coming to acknowledge that you're going to find amongst the Rishonim, his colleagues, holy people, they're going to say just that. They're going to say that these two Pesukim, Pasuk Chof and Pasuk Yutes, are not complementing one another. Each one is. They are completely separate psukim, which are teaching you additional details. Rashi is doing something very fascinating. Rashi is telling us that one pasuk is serving as a perush Rashi on another pasuk. Pun intended. Okay, you know perush Rashi, you know, is an expression, interpretation. That's a very interesting approach. Because if not for Rashi doing that, I by myself, by default, would think that the Torah doesn't do that. When we write our own, you know, our own stories, you know, a person writes anything, you write for the newspaper, you write a novel, you write a biography, an autobiography, whatever you write. Okay, so a human being does not have the ability to properly express himself. So there's a technique. You say a concept, you throw into the person's mind words, ideas, which are incomplete, and then you return to clarify. If you just begin with the clarification, it's not going to work because it's going to get a bit too confusing. And if you just leave it with the general concept, it's going to be too confusing. There's a technique. The technique is, I'm going to make a statement. I'm going to plant in your mind words, themes, concepts, and then I'm going to decipher it. And that's going to provide the best possible way I, as a human being, can explain something to you. That's because we are human beings and we are limited. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not limited. And it's a, to me, it's a chiddush that one pasuk should have to explain what another pasuk is saying. And besides the fact that, it's weird that a pasuk should explain anyway, there are so many psukim which don't make, we don't understand when everything is said and done, and we need to come on to the Torah Shebal Peh, the Masorah, to make sense. Ayin tachas ayin. It says in the pasuk, an eye for an eye. What do you want? You telling me it means money? You don't actually gore out poke out a person's eye if he pokes out someone else's eye. It means instead you evaluate how much a person's worth to be sold as a slave. Where does it say that in the Torah? Where? It doesn't say that anywhere. Oh, so the answer is you're right. We have a tradition. Halacha l'moshe misina. This is all Judaism. What do you want? Judaism is all about we are faithful to the tradition, to the Mesorah. The Mesorah is that when it says ayin tachasayin, it means mamon. It all comes down at the end of the day to Mesorah. So if anyway, half of the Torah, the only way we can make sense out of it is because of the tradition, the Mesorah, and we have the Yud Gimel Midah Shatar Nidreshas, and we have a Mesorah of what it means. So why would it ever be necessary for one pasuk in the Torah to explain another pasuk? That's not what the Torah is in the business of doing. And I personally, if I would read the pasuk, if not for Rashi, I would say that pasuk Yud Tes and Chaf, they seem to be saying the same thing. And anything that's missing that we don't understand, you know, we'll go to the Mesorah. We'll ask the rabbis, what did your teacher tell you? What did he tell him? And we'll figure. If there's another pasuk, it's telling you something new. It's not coming to clarify. And therefore, I would think, when it says a pasuk yutes, you shall make a kruv ech, a pasuk to pasuk yutes, the asi so shnayim kruvim. It says two. Zohav miksha, a kruvim zov of gold. Miksha ta'asel, the way you're going to make, you beat it. Mishnei kitzois, on the two sides of the kapiras. You know what maybe that means? It means may make four. You know, you make four. So far, there's going to be four. They're going to be four on the two ends. They're going to be four. Two on one end, two on another end. How are you going to make it? You're going to take a hammer and beat it, and you're going to make it, and you're going to attach it. Now, pasuk yitess. And you know what? Let's go for six. Va'asei, after you make the four, va'asei kruv echad mikotze mizeh. I'm just telling you from my stomach idea. You put two on, you know, the two, you know, it's a rectangle. So there are two on the ends of the long side. There's a total of four, two on one side, two on the other side. And now it says make one along the width, one in the center. Right? There are four sides. So since we already took into account the two on one side, now we're taking into account the two, we're now going to take into account the other two sides. So make one kruv mikotze mizeh, kruv echad mikotze mizeh. This, don't make it miksha. These two kruvim shall be minak ha-pares. I don't know, what is minak ha-pares? We'll figure it out what the difference is between minak ha-pares and the word miksha. Tasu asak kruvim al shnei kitzayisav, you shall make them on the two other sides. Right, there are four sides. So we've already accounted for two sides in the previous pasuk. So if I wouldn't have a Rashi or Masoira, I would say, Pasuk Yud Ches is teaching me one halacha. Pasuk Yud Tes teaches me a different halacha. The Torah is not in the business of having one pasuk explain another pasuk. That's not what we do. That's not what the Torah does. The Torah teaches you new things. And therefore, if I were no better, who knows? I may come to a conclusion that there's a grand total of six kruvim. Why not? Six is a very nice number. We find in Sefer Yeshaya, we find that the kruvim had six wings. They had six wings. Baruch Shem Kivoyt Malchuso Li'olam Voed. You can start looking in the Midrashim. You can come up with some very nice ideas. And then you have a total of six, and then each one has two wings for 12. Beautiful. The 12 Shvatim of Klal Yisrael. I mean, we can work backwards, and we can fit in anything you need. We'll find the solution for. But how do you look at the Pesukim at face value? Rashi here is doing an awesome chiddush, and he does this other time as well. And Rashi says, I'm telling you how to learn Chumash. In Chumash, sometimes, even though it's true, that many psukim cannot be possibly understood literally, and the only way it can be understood is by coming onto the Mesorah. But sometimes, the psukim want them to be understood. Hashem wanted you to understand the psukim literally. And And for whatever reason, Hashem wrote the Pesukim in a way where one Pasuk is here to explain another Pasuk. And many times you'll have that in the Gemara, but the Gemara is going to go do it over a long distance. A Pasuk in Sefer Devarim explains what it means in Sefer Vayikra. A Pasuk in Sefer Bamidbar will explain what it means in I don't know, somewhere else. Pasuk in Yeshaya will explain what it means in Chumash. Here, get, you're in luck. You don't have to go on a journey. They're right next to each other. Pasuk Yutes is going to explain to you what it means in Pasuk Yutes. In Pasuk Yutes, it says the basic concept. It says something called the Miksha. And it says there's going to be two. And it says it's going to be on the ends. That's very, very vague. That's like raw matter, which you can manipulate in many, many different ways. Along comes Pasuk Yutes and provides enormous clarification. Now, when I told you in the previous Pasuk 2, it doesn't mean 2 plus 2. It means a total of 4. It doesn't mean 2 plus 4. It means a total of 2. And when it says the word miksha in the previous Pasuk, miksha means the same piece of metal as the slave on the bottom. Min hakapayrus. And that's basically it, according to Rashi. I mean, so Rashi over here is his method. To appreciate Rashi's method, it's awesome. One pasuk is coming to explain what it means in another pasuk. That's a chiddush, how you learn pesukim chumash. I personally, I wouldn't expect that to be the case. I'm used to the approach where each pasuk is teaching you something brand new. And if you don't know what it's teaching you, it's your problem, because you don't understand. So go look in the Mesorah. And you know who does exactly this? The Rashbam did this before, in the first Aliyah, the Rashbam did this, and the other Rishonim, I have a whole Sefer at home from this Talmud Chacham from Cleveland, who did a whole Sefer showing you many different ways to read the Pesukim and what they all said. Rashi?
So do that, the beginning of Pasuk Yutes is a clarification, and the whole reason you have it is...
to clarify what it means in Pasuk Yutes. That's exactly what Rashi is doing. This technique is shocking. It's a shocking technique, because I can show you Rishonim that don't hold of this technique. They hold that it's a divine book, and in a divine book, you don't need one pasuk that's not going to be used as a shamish for another pasuk. You're making pasuk Yutes into a servant for pasuk Yutches. Yutches is the master, and pasuk Yutes is the servant. And pasuk
how would other Rishonim...
Like I just told you, the Pasuk is teaching you there is a grand total of 6 Keruvim. There are
you
4.
Did Rishonim say that?
I don't know. I didn't look. I can go home and get the Sefer and go look and see what it says there. I'm sure you're going to find things like this. You have to go find a lot of these Rishonim are very esoteric. For some reason, they didn't all make it into the Mikros Gedolos. That's for sure. And even the ones that we have, they're very esoteric. And you know, the truth is, there were probably many Rishonim that were lost over the years of Golus. They were lost. They disappeared. And it's not that they were wrong. Why? I mean, they're all different ideas to even the Targum. So we have Targum Unkelus and Targum Yerushalmi. One second, the light always goes off at this time. Even the Targum, there are many Targumim, and there are certain things that our Mesorah, we dwell upon this. We dwell upon it. And the other ones, we reject. It's just not the primary commentary. You can read, I can tell you, I just read you the Pasuk over here. I can tell you there are 6 Keruvim. Pasuk Yud-Ches says there are 4 along 2 of the sides. And these 2, the way you fashion these 4 is through a process called miksha, and Pasuk Yutes says now there's going to be another two on the other 2 sides, which is a grand total of 6. And the way you create those is through a different technique called minakapires. What's so terrible saying that in Pasuk? 6 Keruvim, there's a 2 of them miksha, and by the way, those it says you do with zahav, gold. In Pasuk Yutes, it doesn't say gold in Pasuk Yutes. So maybe these other 2 Keruvim are not made from gold. They're made from silver. They're made from wood. Look, Shlomo HaMelech, what did he do in the Beis HaMikdash? Shlomo HaMelech, in addition to Moshe Rabbeinu's in addition to Moshe Rabbeinu's Aron, he built an additional 2 giant-sized kruvim. Giant-sized. What is he doing? Where did he get that from? He put in the Kodesh HaKadoshim these 2 giant. Maybe you'll tell me that it's merumas in this pasuk, because pasuk Yitches is speaking to Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu, you go build your aron. Pasuk Yitches, I'm addressing Shlomo HaMelech. When you're going to build the bayis rishon, va'asei kruv echad mikotzeh mizeh, or kruv echad mikotzeh mizeh, minak ha'poyres. Now the only problem that I just said is because minak ha'poyres means. You know what? The other way around. Let's do the other way around. Maybe Pasuk Yitches refers to the Kruvim of Shlomo. Mr. Rapp, are you familiar with the Kruvim of Shlomo HaMelech?
No, I remember you had mentioned it, that he built extra Kruvim.
Okay, so if you ever get a chance to go look at a picture book from the Bayis Rishon, the Kodesh HaKodesh was much larger. It was 10 Amos by 10 Amos, which was... Wait, I'm forgetting the dimension. Was it larger by the Kodesh HaKadoshim? No, maybe not. It was maybe the same. Wait, no, it was double the size. It was 20 Amos, right? It was 20 by 20, in contrast to Moshe, that was 10 by 10. So it was double the size. And it was the same, Moshe's Aron was the Aron. And the height of the ceiling was much higher. The height of this thing was much, much higher. It was either 40 Amos, but I'm sure it was 30 Amos. So the ceiling was 30 amos tall, and the dimensions of the room was 20 by 20. Compared to Moshe Rabbeinu, it was 20 by 20. Something is wrong there. It can't be. It has to be even bigger then, because the height has to be half. It was 20 amos. I remember. It was 20 amos tall. The ceiling in the Kodesh HaKadoshim was 20. It was like a cube. It was 20 by 20. And a ceiling of 20 amos tall. And in there they brought the Aron of Moshe, and along the end of the room, he built giant-sized kruvim. I think he covered it with copper. I don't know, maybe it was gold, I don't know. I'm just talking out loud with you. So maybe Pasuk Yudches, he's referring to Shlomo HaMelech. The Osis Shnayim Kruvim Zohav, Niksha. The kruvim of Shlomo HaMelech were not meant from one piece of gold. Tase mishnei kitzoy sakaparis. On the floor, they stood on the floor, and they hovered over the kaparis. And then Moshe, you made an aron. I say, Moshe, you shall make for your aron in the Mishkan before we come to the Mikdash. So I'm telling you, like Jewish over here. How do I know? Because how does the beginning of the parasha begin? It says first, you shall make a mishkan, and then it says you shall make a mikdash. The asuli mikdash v'shachanti b'soicha. Rashi is the kasha. What's going on? First? It's called a mishkan. Then it's called a mikdash. What is it? Is it a mishkan or is it a mikdash? So it's the same. A mikdash and a mishkan are interchangeable, but they're not interchangeable. The Mishkan was Moshe Rabbeinu, and the Mikdash was Shlomo HaMelech. And isn't it convenient to take note that in the Mikdash of Shlomo HaMelech, in addition to the Kruvim that was on the Kaparis, there were 2 giant-sized Kruvim that stood on the ground that overhung the entire Aron? And look at the Pasuk. The Pasuk over here says there are 2 different Pesukim, and they're telling you about 2 different Kruvim. I also have a feeling if I would look hard enough, I might even find this Pshat somewhere. I just said a whole Drush, right? The Pasuk calls it a Mishkan and a Mikdash. And we know that the Mishkan, the Mikdash of Shlomo HaMelech was very different. Not very different. It had the basic blueprint of the Mishkan, but it was expanded in a much greater degree. And we all are taught that it was purely Al-Pi Ruach HaKodesh. But you know, maybe besides that it was Al-Pi Ruach HaKodesh, maybe it was hinted. Many of the details of the Mikdash of Shlomo HaMelech was already outlined here in hiding in the parasha itself, because the parasha calls this structure both a mishkan and a mikdash. And look over here, we know for a fact that we're in the Kodesh HaKadosh, there were 2 different sets of kruvim. There was the kruvim on the kaparis, and there was the kruvim that was on the floor that spread its wings over over the entire Kodesh HaKodashim, with a very high ceiling of 20 amos. And maybe that's what one pasuk refers to, the other pasuk refers to. So the question now is, if that drush has any yodayim v'raglayim standing, you have to know how to draw the difference between pshat and drush. Drush is nice, hafeich v'hafeich with the kulaba, but you have to be careful. It's not pshat. Or maybe it is pshat. When do you say it's pshat? When do you say it's drush? Rashi comes here and says, listen here, you want to talk homiletics? Go to shul. You can stand there before Musaf, get up before the Aron HaKodesh, and put your balabatim to sleep by saying all the drush you want. Right now, we're going to learn pshat. And I'm telling you, one pasuk is not referring to Shlomo, and the other referring to Moshe. Don't go telling me that it's referring to Moshe, and Moshe is being told to make 6 keruvim or 4 keruvim. I'm telling you the pshat. And the pshat is, pasuk yud tes is a servant to the master, pasuk yud ches. It's a beyur. It's like you say colloquially, it's a perish Rashi on pasuk yud ches. Wow! Rashi did just that. But you know, that approach to studying Chumash is a chiddush. Because Chumash is not a newspaper. This is not a novel. This is a divine document. And you would expect that in a divine document, you don't know one pasuk serves as a commentary on another pasuk. Each pasuk stands on its own. And in fact, I could show you other Rishonim, they do it all the time. Each pasuk stands on its own. Rashi says not in this case, at least not in his opinion. And Rashi, let's not make any mistake, is the Ikar. Rashi is Rashi. Rashi is a class by himself. Rashi is the Nisoira, and that's just part of the Emunah of an Orthodox Jew. This is it. This is the Emunah. It's Rashi stands on his own. This is the Ikar Pshat. Pasuk Yutes, a commentary to the Pasuk Yutches. Now, when Rashi does this, is Rashi coming to ruffle the feathers of Unkelus? You know, that's a tough question. Because Unkelus is so concise, and so terse, it's very, very hard to decipher very often what Unkelus really means to say. When you study all the Sefer from Cleveland, and you go look at all the Rishonim, and look at all the pictures, and go get dizzy, and who says the person who wrote that Sefer, even though he's an awesome, awesome Talmud Chacham, who says he got it right? Maybe what he put down on the page, this commentary and his interpretation of the picture that he drew, who says he drew the right pictures? We trust him. He spent many years on this. We assume that if anyone knows what it means, he knows what it means. But you know, people make mistakes. But after you go begin to uncover all the different possibilities, and then you go back and look at the Unkelus, and you pick up on a nuance, a little nuance in Unkelus, you begin to wonder, maybe Unkelus, Rashi is coming to disagree with Unkelus. Okay, let's go further. Now let's go to Pasuk Chof, a new sugya. The wings, okay, airplanes need wings to fly. They need wings. Angels need wings. The hoyu hakruvim par se chinafayim. They would spread their wings. You know, if not for this pasuk, how would we even know that kruvim have wings? Who says kruvim have wings? Where does this come from? Whoever says they have wings. How does all this work? People in space, they don't have wings. They can move, they can propel themselves in the space station. They show you all the time. People in the space station, they move around very well. They're able to move very quickly from place to place by propelling themselves, and they don't have wings. So who says the malachim need wings? Where does all this come from? You need wings? If there's no gravity, you can move wherever you want to move. Somehow, there's something about wings, which is very interesting. You know what I want to say the wings are for? I want to say achidish. See, we live in this world with this gravity. What's the gravity? Gravity pulls us down. Why do we need wings? To pull us up. Go in the airplane. The engines propel the airplane. They push it. And the wings give us the koyach to outsmart gravity. gravity pulls us down. Why? Because the lower you go, the more gashmis. This world is an olam of gashmi. Man has in him gashmius. So man is naturally being pulled down. You need wings to pull yourself up. Now, what about in the spiritual world? The higher you go, the closer you come to Hashem. When there's no gashmius, you're pulled. The gravity pulls you to Hashem. But you can't go to Hashem because you don't deserve to be there. A person who allows his neshama to gravitate to Hashem may get burnt. He may get burnt up. Why will he get burnt up? Because I don't belong there. My neshama is not worthy of being there. But my neshama is naturally, in the olam of spirituality, the gravity works the opposite way. You need wings to push you away from getting too close to Hashem. See, we're brainwashed in thinking that angels have wings because angels are like this gravity. And when there's gravity, you want to move. And you need wings to defy gravity. Yeah, that's a very nice concept in this world. In this world, man has this gravity, pulls you to the ground. If you want to move, you gotta have wings to fly. But in the Olam HaElyon, the gravity is the opposite. The neshama is automatically being pulled naturally to the highest source of Kedusha, to Hashem himself. But if a neshama is not worthy of getting close to Hashem, it's going to get burnt. So the neshama has to go against its natural gravity and push it away from Hashem. So it needs the wings to defy gravity to go down. Mr. Rapper, what do you say about that? Rabbi Lazy, you hear what I'm trying to say?
It sounds interesting. Like they said, like you said to us before, no one ever tried it. Came back and closed.
Okay, so here we have the Kruvim that are spreading their wings lamala, upwards. What are they doing? They're soichachim bechanfeyim. They are hovering, like sechach. They are sheltering with their wings, ala kapayres, on the kapayres. Ufnehem, their faces, which we learned before, Rashi told us it means kruv, means a kravya, child, that face of little children. Ish el ochiv, one to his fellow. Notice we're calling them both men. This is problematic. Because Chazal say one was the tzur of a male and the other was the tzur of a female. So we would think it should be Ish el Zohar el Nekeva, Ish el Isha. Both terms here are masculine terms. That's a contradiction to the Chazal that says that one was a male, one was a female. You'd have to come up with some type of expression, depending on what you're trying to accomplish, to indicate one is a male, one is a female. And it seems, though, that because the pasuk explicitly says one to the other, so we're just using these terms, non-gender specific, as objects, because they're not really male and female in Shemayim. You know, is there such a thing? Is there such a thing of kruv, male and females? Is there such a thing as marriage? It doesn't seem like
it. Says in the pasuk, ishalachav.
So, but Chazal tell us the tzur of one was a male, and the tzur of another was a female. It's a Pesach Gemara. Oh, I don't know. So obviously, when you're dealing with kruvim, angels, even though one may be in one of the face of a male or female, these are not human beings. By a human being, there's the grammar. There's a male, a female. A male is a noisin, a female is a makabel. You know, all that type of stuff. But in Shemayim, okay, one angel looks as the tzur of a female, but angels are not males or females as we know it. So we can refer even to a female as b'lashon zachar. Is that what it means? Look, by Miriam, when Miriam sang Shira, Vatan Lohem Miriam. This is a very famous question. Miriam, she went out with the musical instruments. to sing, and she went with all the women. Vatan lohem. It should say vatan lohen, not lohem. What's why is it lohen? She expressed herself to them. That's not the correct grammar. So again, you see their women in their interaction with one another being described as in the masculine term. Maybe there are more rules to grammar than we know. Okay, that's a very popular question. Here, how could you ignore this when we learn the Gemara in Gittin talks about when it says even Beferish that when they came in, they destroyed the Beis HaMikdash, they came in, they saw the Kruvim, the Beis Rishon, they saw that they saw the tsur of a male and a female. It looked like Jews were doing crazy things. Male and female looking at each other, it looked like they didn't look good. The Isaac in these things. Here it says Ish El Ochim. Okay, we'll leave with the question. Akaparis to now, and here it says El Akaparis. They're looking at each other, contradiction. And then it says they're looking towards the Kaparis. Yiyu Pnei Akruvim. Okay, so there's a lot of stuff over here. We're gonna have to wait until tomorrow because we're out of time. I want to keep you. All right, Rabbi Yisrael, we'll continue Mirtz Hashem tomorrow. Thank you very much for coming and learning with me.
Okay. Good night, Rabbi.
All the best, Rabbi Yisrael. Good night. Good night.
Good night, everybody.
Good night, Rabbi Lazer. Good night. Keshi, good night. Norman, good night. Thank you for coming.